Welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. Where the international female violin band Delhi and Mumbai are helping us open it up. Four ladies on the strings, three on violins. One on cello. There is some serious energy when these ladies play. And as it turns out, they are from Delhi and Mumbai. All right, I'm going to be letting you hear some more of that as we go. I'm telling you, there is some serious energy when they play. They can play. I'll definitely be telling you some more about them as we go. Fascinating, fascinating, and I'm telling you, you heard it. They can play. They can show enough play. All right. Again, welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. Good to have you with us another day. Another day that we want to bring some information that you can use. That's right. How many of you enjoy, speaking of using, enjoy using your technological devices? Whether you're talking about a desktop, an Alexa, smartphone, laptop, iPod, how many of you really enjoy using those devices? They really might make life a lot simpler in a lot of ways, don't they? You remember the days, well, I know some of us do, some of you don't, but the days when we needed to go to the library when we were going to do some serious research, we needed to go to the library and look up information in the books. Yep, the encyclopedias, dictionaries, and other reference books in the reference section of the library. Yep, information that we needed for research, whether for business reports, school reports, you name it. And when you really wanted to go deep, you needed to ask the librarian to help you look up information on microfiche, microfilm. It was sort of like, I know a lot of you have never used it, so you're probably thinking, okay, now what is he talking about? But if you can think about movies where you've seen people who took pictures with their cameras and then they had to take the film to a dark room in order to process the film. And think about that plastic that the film was made of. Well, it was material sort of like that, that had lots of information, and you rolled it through a machine that would enlarge the print for you so you could read it, because it was very small print. May have been about, let's just say, 2 or 3 inches wide, maybe a sixth of an inch thick, very, very thin, about as thick as maybe 2 or 3 sheets of paper. That's it. But it could be fairly long, just depending on how much information you had on there. But being that small, you can imagine you weren't going to just hold that in your, that film in your hand and read it. So you had to put it on a machine that would amplify the text for you so you could read it. Those were the days, right? So here we go. We're using all that information, and the next thing you know, lo and behold, we get the computer. Start that baby up. And is opening up on the DOS system, using dial-up service. And even though we could do a whole lot once it got going, even using typewriters, you know, basically you just take the typewriter out of the case that it was in, and you're ready to start writing. If it was a power typewriter that you had to plug in, no problem. Just plug it in, turn it on, and start typing away. Some of them got so fancy that they started putting the little LCD screens on there so that you could see on screen what was being typed onto your paper. Electronic typewriters that made it so much easier to erase errors, to delete errors, I should say, because there was a time when we did have to get an eraser and erase the error that had been made on the paper that we were typing on. And then you just hope that you would get it lined up perfectly when you were ready to resume typing. That really still was a great way to go. We didn't have anything else. It was a great way to go. Fast forward a bit, and you're looking at the opportunity to use a computer. Be a whole lot easier to correct errors, be able to move faster. Only thing is, it seemed like you were sitting there for days waiting for the operating system to finish loading up. And I tell you what, sometimes it got a little aggravating for some people. And I'm thinking, man, why are they upset about it taking a while? I mean, yes, it is taking a while, but once it's loaded, once it's up and running, man, you're going to be able to fly. But it was slow. When you consider how fast things got when you no longer had to use the DOS, but you could work from operating systems that move so much faster, turn the button, switch the button on, and a lot of folks just leave the computers on at all times, but switch the button, turn it on, enter your password, give it a few seconds, boom, you're ready to go. It is amazing. Of course, we did dial-up. We did broadband, DSL. I mean, things are really picking up speed-wise, quality-wise in a lot of ways, too. But I'm thinking primarily about the speed. But speaking of speed, let's let the hostess from Seeker.com share with us what's coming down the pipe when it comes to technology.
Right now is data that's being transferred to you through a wire, which is then decoded, making it. This video that you're watching right now is data that's being transferred to you through a wire, which is then decoded, making it into something viewable on your device. And that's the internet. Bada bing, bada boom. No, I'm just kidding. It's a lot more complicated than that. But part of what we call the internet is information that travels through wires, from servers, satellites, data centers, or other computers to your personal router. These wires are more formally known as fiber optic cable. And did you notice the important part of that name, fiber optic cable? That's because all that data, the information being transferred to you as you request it from your web browser on your desktop or the banking app on your phone, physically travels through the wires in the form of light. Pulses of light are sent from the data's point of origin through the cable. Photons bouncing around inside that cable travel to the other end, where there's some kind of receiver, like a photodiode or a photoelectric cell. And this device is what translates those packets of light in their given pattern back into electrical information that your computer can then understand and present to you as the information you asked for, like a web page. That's crazy, right? Well, it's about to get even crazier. New research has just demonstrated the feasibility of the world's first nanophotonic device. See, in most standard systems, we currently only use a fraction of light's capacity to transmit data. And this is because we haven't previously had the technology to decode anything else. But new efforts are making use of light beyond the visible spectrum, like ultraviolet waves. And in this version of data transmission, the light is not just photons pinging around, reflecting their way down the inside of the cable. The light waves, both visible and not, oscillate in a particular way to form a twisted pattern, also known as orbital angular momentum, or twisted light. Because twisted light is made up of more modes of light, that light is able to carry more information. In fact, because the light traveling through the fiber is made up of different kinds of twists, they can even overlap with one another, each carrying a different data stream all at the same time without interfering with each other. But we have to have something at the other end of that fiber that can then decode all that packed-in information, right? And this brand new nanophotonic chip can do exactly that. Using something called ultra-thin complementary metal oxide semiconductor technology, which is quite a mouthful, the team has successfully demonstrated what they call compact high-precision angular momentum nanometrology. Man, that vocab is something else. I liked it when we were just calling it twisted light. Basically, the technology we used to have to decode even a smidgen of that twisted light data was the size of a table. And now, it's the size of an ultra-thin wafer that fits onto the end of an optical fiber, bringing us a little closer to the use of twisted light in the real world. Because the thing is, we don't just use fiber optic cable for accessing the bountiful power of the internet. We also now use it to carry our phone conversations, to broadcast TV, and even in medical applications to measure vital patient statistics like cell pH or the presence of medicine or toxins in the bloodstream, vastly enhancing the amount of data that can be sent through fiber optic cable and then importantly processed and translated at never-before-seen speeds and in a usable way could transform our whole informational world. Chances are, though, this won't be used to bring the consumer that much more computing power. It's more applicable in cases like finding better ways to communicate with vehicles in space, or potentially providing a way for us to process and use the information that would hypothetically come from quantum computers, which would be leaps away from the complexity and size of the data that we work with in our current computing systems. What can we say? The future looks bright. Twisted bright. Fun fact, reportedly 99% of international data passes through wires at the bottom of the ocean called submarine communications cables, thousands of miles long. Thanks for always coming back to Seeker for your breaking science and tech news, and we'll see you next time.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, what do you think about that? Did she disappoint you at all when she indicated that we're probably not going to be using it, we the consumers, the everyday people? Man, she was getting my hopes up. Now, I'll be honest, I'm not really sure that I would have a need for all that speed, but kind of nice to know that if we did need it, or if we just wanted it. Wow, things moving so fast now. Okay, well, we might look at some more of that a little bit later, but for now, let me take you back to a conversation that I was having. Oh, let me interrupt myself for just a moment. I do want to apologize for another adjustment to the program. We were going to be having Dr. John Caldwell speak with me today, and I had to switch it. There was a technological problem that made it necessary for us to reschedule. I was really looking forward to you hearing his discussion of Anatomy of Victory. He really goes in depth looking at history, looking at war in an amazing way. Brilliant man who has written a brilliant book entitled Anatomy of Victory, where he talks about some of the wars that America has participated in and talks about winning, losing, coming to a draw. What led to each of those outcomes? Very in-depth. He takes a look at the war in Korea, the war in Vietnam, the war in Iraq and others, the world wars, 1 and 2. It is amazing what he has to offer. And so, again, I truly apologize that we may have disappointed some of you, because some of you were probably looking forward to it as much as I was. But like I said, we've agreed to reschedule. And so I'll let you know when that conversation will be broadcast. So be on the listen up. Now, to take us back to a conversation that I began earlier this week, Monday, as a matter of fact, has to do with animals and animal testing. And I must give this notice up front. As we talk about this, some of this can be kind of hard to take as we take a listen to some of the things that happen with animals when it comes to animal testing. We're looking at this courtesy of procon.org, and we're asking a question when it comes to animal testing. Should it be continued? Should it not be continued? The pros are saying, yes, animal testing should be continued. The cons are saying animal testing should not be continued. And I tell you, anyone whose heart goes out to animals may find some of this really, really difficult to take. But at the same time, on the other hand, some people might say, but what about the value of human lives? Which is greater, human life or the animal life? I'm letting each of you decide, as is my custom, but also as is my custom, as we look at the at both sides of this issue, I do ask that you will go ahead and listen with an open mind. And again, I'm not saying make sure that you're ready to change your mind about your position. That's not what I'm saying. I am saying let's just practice truly listening to both sides. In this case, both sides, because there are only two sides. But in other cases, there may be three sides, four sides. Let's practice developing the ability to truly listen to everyone talking, truly hearing what they have to say, trying to understand what they say and why they say it. That doesn't necessarily mean we have to also be ready to change our positions. Now, I will say this. There may be times when we really do need to change our positions. When we need to change our positions, let's be big enough to, number one, admit we need to change our positions. And then, number two, be strong enough to go ahead and change our position. When that's what's called for, when that's the right thing to do. Okay. That's it. Let's take a look at what's being said in favor of continuing animal testing. But, of course, let's also take a look at what is being said in favor of discontinuing animal testing. As soon as we get back.